B'siyata d'shmaya, we're going to start Eruvin Daf Nun Hey. We're going to start 11 lines from the top of the Omid. And we're going now back to the Mishnah. The first Mishnah of this Perek was discussing about squaring off a town. If a city was round, or we'll soon see different sizes, different dimensions, that in order to gain the corners and that the Eruv should be measured from a largest possible area as we can, then we actually extend, virtually speaking, we extend the dimensions of a town, and from this virtual extension, from there they actually start measuring the 2,000 amah tchum that people are allowed to walk on Shabbos. Says the Gemara, Tonu Rabbonon, Keitzad ma'abrin es ha'orim. How do we extend the cities, the towns, when trying to establish from where they can, from where the tchum starts, and thereby knowing where the tchum ends? Says the Braisa Aruko, if the town was a long town, kamois shehu, that means it was a rectangular town, it was square, it had corners. We already saw previously that with the halachas of Shabbos, everything is measured with corners. And if it's regular, it's a town that's rectangular, then it has corners, and there's no need to there's no need to extend it in any way. And we'll see in the Gemara what's the chiddush of this halacha. Agula, if the town is a round town, oisin lozovyos, we extend it, so to speak, to form a square. We square it off, and then we measure the 2,000 amos from that square. Merubas, if the city itself is square, ein oisin lozovyos, then we do not need to create corners for it. We do not need to extend it in order to encompass corners. It has corners, it's square. And we'll see in the Gemara what the chiddush of this halacha is. Hoysa rechovo mitzad echod, uktzoro mitzad achir. If the city was wider on one side than it was on the other side, for example, if on the west, the western part of the city from north to south was larger, was longer than the eastern side of the city from north to south, then royin oisok ilu hishove, we square it off, and we assume that the north and south boundaries of the city are squared to the length of the western side of the city, which is longer and larger than the eastern side. And then once we've virtually squared it off, we then measure the tchum from there. Hoyo bayis echod yoitze kamin pigum. If one house is protruding from the city, from the other homes in the city, like a tower, a tower typically protruded from the city walls, or if two homes protruded from the city, from the perimeter of the city, like two towers. And the Gemara will discuss, if we square off a city that's got just a protrusion of one home, of course we would do that with two homes. We'll see in the Gemara. Then Ryan Oison Kiilu Chut Matuach Alem, we view them as if a virtual string was stretched between these two protruding homes, or if it's just one protruding home, then we virtually extend the town to the point or the edge of that protruding home. And then umaydeid mimenu ulaholon alpaim amo, and we measure the 2,000 amatchum from that point. Hoysa asuyo kamin keshes. If the town was shaped like a bow, it was going round, and the two ends of the bow are relatively far from each other. We'll see in the Gemara how far, are far from each other, and they go round and reach a certain point, as any bow does, an arc, and then it goes all the way around like a bow. Oikamin gum, or if the city is shaped like the letter, it's right angled, which is shaped like the Greek letter gamma, which is what we would call a final chof. Royin oisok ilu hi maleo batim v'chatzeiros. Then, virtually speaking, we pretend, we view it as if the city is totally full, which means that if it's a kamin keshes, if the city is shaped like a bow, then we assume that the whole area between the two ends of the bow are filled, and also at the top of the bow, where there's, so to speak, corners, where it's arching round, then it's as if it's filled. no different to a circular city that we saw, that we square it off. So we square off this whole city, and the whole bow-shaped homes are within the square. And the same with the gum. If there's homes that are right angled to each other, then we fill in the whole gap as if it's all inhabited, and we measure the tchum from there. From there we measure the 2,000 amos. That's the end of the braisa. And now the Gemara is going to elaborate on some of the halachas. Omar mar, aruka kemois shehi. If the city is long, if it's rectangular, then we leave it as it is. It has its own corners. There's no need to extend it. Asks the Gemara Pshita, is this not obvious? Well, how would you extend it? What would you need to extend it for? Says the Gemara Loi, tzricha da'aricha oktino. We're talking about that this city is long in one direction and short in the other, which means it's rectangular. It's not exactly square. Mao de tema, I may have thought, litein lo pusya aurka, that we give it the boundaries, we extend the width to be similar to its length, and thereby turning it into an exact square. Komash malon, the Bryce is coming to teach us that we do not do this, since the city itself is rectangular, it has corners, we do not square it off, we do not extend it. Continues the Gemara with the next halacha in the Braisa. Merubas, if the city is square, ein oisin ozovius, then we do not create virtual corners to such a city. Asks the Gemara Pshita. Of course, is it not obvious? Why would we want to change the boundaries of a square city? Answers the Gemara Loi. It's not so straightforward, it's not so obvious. Tricho, we need the Braisa to tell us this halacha. Demir Abo, indeed the city is square. Veloi mirabo birubua oilom. However, the square is not aligned with the directions of the world. It's not as if there's one wall which is exactly west, going from north to south on the west side, another edge of the city on the east from north to south, another edge on the north going from west to east, and another one on the south going from west to east. No, what happens if the city is tilted somewhat, and one edge of the city is like angled northwest? Then I may have thought that we square off the city so that its boundaries conform with the directions of the world. I may have thought that we square off the city so it should be parallel to the directions of the world. Komash malon, that's what the Bryce is teaching us, that not as long as the city in and of itself is square, we do not extend it in any way. Continues the Gemara, we're going to now discuss the next ruling in the Braisa. Hoyo bayis echod yetze kmin pogum. Oy shnei batim yetzim kmin shnei pigumim. If you have one home protruding from a city, like similar to a tower would protrude from the wall of a city, or two homes protruding, then the Braisa says that you make a virtual line between, or at the edge, at the end of this protruding home or homes, and we measure the city from there. Ask the Gemara, Hashta bayis echos omrus, if just one home protruding from the city, you say that we extend the city's boundaries to include that home, shnei batim miboya, is it necessary to tell us that the same would apply if two homes are protruding? Of course, if one home would extend the city, two homes would extend the city. Answers the Gemara, loi, it's not so straightforward, tzricha, there's an element of chiddush here. Mishtei ruchos, if the two homes are on two sides of the city, for example, on the north of the city, there's a home protruding, and on the south of the city, there's a home protruding. Ma'od teima, I may have thought, miruach echad omrinon, we only extend the city's boundaries on one edge, on one side, mishtei ruchos lay omrinon, but if there's a home protruding on two sides of the city, we would not say that. Komash malon, the Bryce is telling us that's not the case, even on two sides. If there's a home protruding, we extend the city to include that home. Continues the next halacha in the Braisa. Hoyse asuyo kamin keshes. If the city was shaped like a bow, oy kamin gam, or like the Greek letter gamma, which is homes right angled to each other, royin oyso ki iluhi meleo botim v'chatzeris. We view the city as if the uninhabited section of the city, which is the inner part of the bow, or the inner part of this right-angled city, it's as if it's filled with houses and courtyards. And we measure the 2,000 amotchum from that virtually inhabited city. Says the Gemara, Omer of Huna, Ir ha'asuyo kekeshes, a city that's built like a boat, im yesh bein shnei rosheo, pocho is mi'arbos alofim amo. If there are less than 4,000 amos between the right-hand end of the bow city and the left-hand end of the bow city, every bow is going round. It's a semicircle. A semicircle, it reaches a peak in the middle, and it's it branches off to the right and to the left, making a semicircle, a boat. So if the end of the city on the right and the end of the city on the left is less than 4,000 amos, moedim lo min hayeser. Yeser is this string of the bow. We know if you imagine a bow and an arrow, a bow is something which is drawn, it's pulled. The bow itself gets arced round, and there's a string that's going from, that gets pulled, that is taut from one end to the other end. So we say that if there's less than 4,000 amos between the two ends of the city, then we measure the 2,000 amos from that virtual type of line called the yeser, which is the this, so to speak, the bowstring, where the bowstring would be, and that is where we measure the tchum from. Vim lav moedidim lo min akeshes. But if the distance between the two ends are more than 4,000 amos, which means that you could not really get from one side to the other with making an eruv tchumin, because let's remember, technically speaking, the city is going round and the whole area in the middle of the bow is uninhabited. So if one wanted to go from the end of one end of the city to the other in a straight line, if it's more than 4,000 amos, one would not be able to go using an eruv tchumin. Obviously, in the event that that would be necessary, in the event that we do not square off the city, that moedidin lo min hakeshes, and in the event that it's more than 4,000 amos, then we measure from the bow itself, not from where the bowstring would be. And the Rishonim discuss this. Does that mean that you measure from the top of the bow itself, the 2,000 amos, or do we actually allow us to virtually fill this bow until the gap between the right and the left reaches 4,000 amos? Because every arc, every semicircle towards the peak, the distance between right and left is very narrow. As it comes further away from the peak and the curve gets larger, the area between right and left gets wider. So the Gemara is telling us that from the point where there's more than 4,000 amos, or if there's 4,000 amos or more between right and left, from that point we no longer fill in the gap, and we measure 2,000 amos from that point. Asks the Gemara, Umi Omer Rav Huna Hocha, does Rav Huna indeed say that if you have up to 4,000 amos, then we fill it up, and if not, then not? If Omer Rav Huna says another halacha elsewhere, if you have the wall of a city that was breached, 141 and a third amos, then if the gap is not more than that, then we view the city as being one city, even though there's a breach in it. However, if the city, if the gap is more than 141 and a third amos, then we see the two sides of the city as being totally independent of each other, and they're not considered a single city anymore. So you see there that the maximum separation between two parts of what was one city that's now considered two cities is 141 and a third amos. So how can Rav Huna here say that you have up to 4,000 amos between one side of a city and another, and only if the gap is 4,000 amos or more do we say that the two cities are not considered one cities, that we extend the inhabited part as if it's, we extend the uninhabited part as if it's inhabited, you have till 4,000 amos. Contrary to what Rav Huna said, that a breach in the wall of a city, you only have 141 and a third. Omar Rabbi Bar Ula explains this seeming contradiction. Lo Ikashia, he says it's not a difficulty. Kan Beruach Achas, Kan Mishtei Ruchois. In the case of the bow-shaped city, only one side is completely breached, but the other side, where the peak of the bow is, it's the homes are uninterrupted, and therefore Rav Huna says that as long as you could go from one side to the next within the boundaries of Tchum, which means that there's not more than 4,000 Amis in between, it's considered a single city. However, in the case of the breach and the wall in the city, is Kan Mishtei Ruchos, it's talking about that there's an unpopulated gap going on both sides, severing, it's cutting the entire city into two. On both sides of the city, there's this gap. And if so, Rav Huna says that if it's 141 and a third Amis, if it's more than 141 and a third Amis, the two sides of the city are considered as independent. They each have their own tchum. We do not view it as being a single city. If the case of the city with the breached walls is talking about the entire city is cut into two, and there's nothing joining the two parts of the city, then what is Rav Huna coming to teach us? Is he coming to tell us? Because there's a concept called the Karpef. Till now we understood the Karpef was an area surrounded, it was a walled-in area that was used for storage. But every city also has a Karpef. A Karpef means 70 and two-thirds Amma around every city, which is used for storage, to put wood there and other storage. And every city needs that 70 and two-third Amis. It's part of the city, and you actually measure the Tchum beyond that point. And we're going to see there's a discussion whether we give any single city 70 and two-third Amis, which is called the Karpef, around it, even if it's just a single city, or do we just say that if you've got two cities next to each other, then if you give a Karpef to each, that then the two Karpefs are flush with each other, they meet each other, then it combines the two cities. So over here we're saying, Mike Mash Malon, what is Rav Huna coming to teach us? That if you have a city that's totally broken into two, and you have more than 141 and a third Amis in between, what's the Chiddush? The two cities are totally separated. Of course we don't merge them into one. Are you coming to teach us that when you have two cities next to each other, you give each one a Karpef, you give each one 70 and two-third Amis, and that's where Rav Huna gets his 141 and a third Amis from? Is that the Chiddush? Mike Mashmalon. The Noisnin Karpef Lezu, Karpef Lezu. Are you trying to inform us, Rav Huna, that we grant an extension of 70 and two-third Amis to each of the cities that are next to each other? Ha'om Rav Huna Chod HaZimna. Rav Huna has already told us this once before. Ditnan, because we learnt in a Mishnah. Noisnin Karpef Le'ir. One gives around a city, one gives 70 and two-third Amis around a city where they would use it for storage. And they measure the tchum from the Divrei Reb Meir, that's the opinion of Reb Meir. V'chachomim oimrim, the Chachomim argue with Reb Meir, and say, Lo omru karpef elo bein shtei yoris. When you have a single city, we do not give 70 and two-third Amis around the city, we measure the tchum from the city itself, from the edge of the homes. However, when you have two cities, then we give, only then we put in between the two cities, we give an allowance of a karpef. V'itmer. And to explain this Mishnah, we saw that Rav Huna Omar, Karpef Lezu, V'Karpef Lezu. Rav Huna says that the Chachomim who say that you give a Karpef in between two cities, you give actually a Karpef to each, which is twice 70 and two-third Amis. Together, it's 141 and a third. So Rav Huna wouldn't have to tell us here that when the city is breached and there's more than there's 141 and a third Amis or more, then the two cities are not combined. They each have their own dimensions, and we measure the tchum of each city separately. You've already told it to us here that you give a karpef to each. V'chia Barav Omar, Chia Barav argued with Rav Huna and said, "A noisnin elo karpef echod l'shneim, you only give a single karpef of 70 and two-third Amis between the two cities. If there's less than 70 and two-third Amis between the two cities, only then it's considered a single city, and we measure the tchum from the two together. Otherwise, each city has its own tchum." So either way, you see from here that Rav Huna has already told us that you give a karpef to each of the two cities. So what are you coming to teach us by saying that a breach that's breached on both walls, which means the city's been entirely severed, that we give a karpef to each? Says the Gemara, Tzricha, it's necessary for Rav Huna to tell us in both cases that you give a karpev to each city. If Rav Huna would only tell us in the breached city, which is what we started with, that when you have a breach of 141 and a third amos or more, that the two cities are separate, I may have thought, Mishum dehavale tzad heter meikora. I may have thought that only in that case you give two karpevs and not just one karpev, and that is because the two together, the two halves, were once a single city before the walls got breached. Now the walls got breached and it's considered two cities, then Rav Huna says we give each one their own space, their own karpif. Mishum dehavale tzad heter mikara, because at the beginning it was an undivided city. Aval hasam, but in the case of two independent cities, when we're discussing how much distance to give between the two, eim eloi, I would have thought that we do not give two karpifs, one to each city. Maybe in that case, Rav Huna would have agreed to Chiya Barav that you only give a single karpif between the two. V'yeshmin and Hosom, and if Rav Huna had only informed us that when it's an original two cities that you give a karpif to each, I may have thought, Mishum d'dechika tashmishtayu. It's because it's very important, they need to have this space for storage, and if you deprive them of that, you're actually going to deprive them of a regular use of the cities. Aval hocha, but in the case of a single city that just got broken, the walls got breached, where they never had this space in the middle of the city for storage. It's just now that the city itself has become breached and there's a gap in between. Deloy dechika tashmishayu. There, it's not so necessary. They were used to not having this area. I may have thought, ei meloi, we do not give them two karpevs, we do not give them a distance of 141 and a third amos before saying it's two separate cities. Tzricha, that's why Rav Huna had to say that even in that case, we give each of them 70 and two-third amos, and anything less than that, the two parts of the city will be considered a single city. And now the Gemara is going to continue discussing this bow-shaped city. V'kamo havo bein yeser lekeshes. What is there a maximum or minimum amount of area between the keshes, the middle of the bow, the peak of the bow, and the bowstring, which is the section, the string that would go between the right-hand end of the city and the left-hand end of the city? Till now we discussed the distance of this bowstring, the distance between the last homes on the right and the last homes on the left. And we said that if it's up to 4,000 amos, then we extend the city. The question is, how about the distance between the bow itself, the middle of the bow, and the string? Is there any maximum or minimum distance that for this halacha? Rabbi Bar Rav Huna Omar Arpaim Amo. Rabbi Bar Rav Huna says that if the distance is greater than 2,000 amis from the center of the bow until the virtual string between the two ends of the bow, then in that case we do not start measuring the tchum from the, so to speak, from the bow string, rather from the end of 2,000 amis. Rabbi Bereda, Rabbi Bar Rav Huna, Omar. First we mentioned Rabbi Bar Rav Huna, Rabbi the son of Rav Huna. Now we're mentioning Rava, the son of Rabbi Bar Rav Huna. He said, Afilu Yoser Melpaim Amo, even if there's more than 2,000 amis between the bow and the bowstring, we view it as if it's totally filled with homes, and we measure the 2,000 amis from the bowstring. Omar Abaya, Kavaseda Rava Bereda Rabba Bar Rav Huna, Mistabra, the opinion of Rava is the more likely one. Di Boya Hoder Osa Derech Batim, because either way, you could reach, you could go from one end of the city to the other end of the city by going all the way around, even though normally tchum is 2,000 amis. Normally you cannot go more than 2,000 amis. And are you going to say that now if there's 2,000 amis, I cannot get from point A to point B in the city, and therefore we do not virtually fill up the uninhabited part as if it's full of homes? No, either way you could get from one place to the other in the city by going all the way around through the homes, through the area that was inhabited. And therefore the fact that there's 2,000 amis from the top of the bow until the bowstring does not bother us. And the way to understand this is the same as we saw before, that if the gap between the right-hand most part of the city and the left side of the city is less than 4,000 amos, then we do not separate the city, we just square in and extend the whole city to incorporate the entire area. Why? Because at any point, you could always get to anywhere within the bowstring. That means if the bowstring, if the area between the two ends of the homes is less than 4,000 amos, then from the right-handmost home, you could go 4,000 amos to the left. From the left-handmost homes, you could go 4,000 amos to the right, which means that as long as at any point on this bowstring, you could always have got to somehow on Shabbos, therefore, the two parts of the city are not considered as separate. So too over here, as long as you have, even if you have more than 2,000 amos from the top of the bow to the bowstring, it doesn't matter because you can still reach any area by going to any of the homes, either on the right or on the left, and reaching every and any point in the center of this bow. And therefore, the entire area is considered as an extension of the city, and we measure the tchum from there. And now we're going. Now the Gemara is going back to the Mishnah. Hoyusham gedudiyos gavoyos asara tvachim. We saw in the Mishnah that if there's protrusions from the city, from the town, or some ruins that are 10 tvachim high, that we extend the boundary of the city to incorporate them. We square it off and we count the tchum from there. The question is, what is the definition of these ruins? My gedudiyos. What are ruins in this context? Omer of Yehuda, Shalish Mechitzois She'ein Aleim Tikra. As long as they have three walls, even if there's no roofing on it, it's considered as ruins and is an extension of the city. Ask the Gemara Boyelu, they inquired, Shtei Mechitzois V'yesh Aleim Tikra Mahu. What happens if you have just two walls of the ruins that are left, but you have a roof on top of the two? Do we say that they are still considered enough of a resemblance of the home that used to be there? Because the main rule is that anything that's considered a home that is host or is able to be used as residence, that serves as an extension of the city. The exception to that are these ruins, and the only reason that we incorporate them and use them as extensions to the town, to the city, is because it used to once be a residence. The question is, if you have just two walls with a roof on it, is there still enough resemblance of that residence to be included as an extension of the city as gedudiyos or not? Tarshima, we're going to try and resolve this from a brisa. Eilu shemes abrin imo. The following structures are included, that they, if they protrude from a city, they are included in the extension, in the boundaries of the city. Nefesh, which is a tomb building, sheyesh bo arba amis al arba amis, as long as it contains 4x4 amis, and the reason that it has this home, this area, is because the person that's taking care of the tombs would reside there. Vageshir, or bridge, vakever sheyesh bo beis dira, or a graveyard that has a dwelling area, ubeis haknesses, or a shul, sheyesh bo beis dira lechazan, that has an area, normally shuls are not used as residence, and not used for residential purposes, it's just used to daven in and to learn in. However, if there's a room there for the chazan, then it's considered a residential home. Ubeis avodes kechovim, or if it's a home where they served idols, sheyesh bo beis dira lekoimrim, that has a dwelling place for the priests, va urvois, or the stables, va oitzrois, or the storage rooms, shebesodois, in the fields, v'yesh ben beis dira, and they have a dwelling place for the guard to dwell within them, va burganin, and the huts, shebetoicha, in the field, there were huts there, va bayis shebayam, or if you have a home on an island at sea, Hare elu misabrin imo, all of these are included, they're considered as residents, and they are included in the city, and one extends the city to incorporate these dwellings. Ve'elu she'eni misabrin imo, And the following are types of structures that are not included in the city's extensions. Nefesh shenifritzom mishtei ruchois eilach ve'eilach. A tomb building that was breached on two of its sides. And this is actually where we're going to bring proof, where at this point the Gemara is going to assume that there's actually a roofing on this, on these two remaining walls. And we're going to try and bring proof from here that it's not considered enough of a dwelling to be an extension of a city. V'agesher v'akever she'ein lahem beis dira, or a bridge or a graveyard that does not contain a dwelling place. U'beis ha'kneses she'ein lo beis dira l'chazon, or a shul that does not have a room for the chazon to dwell in. U'beis avodas kechovim she'ein lo beis dira l'koimrim, or a place where they serve avodah zara, where they serve idols, without a room for the priests to be in. Va'urvois, or the stables, va'itzres shebesodois, and the storage houses in the fields. She'ein lo beis dira, in the event that they do not contain a dwelling place for the guard. Uboyer, v'siach, u'ma'ora, a cistern, a ditch, a cave. V'geder, v'sheivach shebesoicha, and a fence or a dovecot in the fields. V'habayis shebesfino, or a house on a boat, which even if it's large enough and even if people live in it, it's not stable, it's not fixed in one place. Ein elu misabrin imo, all of these are not included as an extension of the city. That's the end of the Braisa, says the Gemara. Ktonimius. But what did we see in this Braisa? That nefesh, this tomb building, shenifritzom mishtei ruchoisel, that was breached on two of its sides, which means there's only two remaining walls, eloch ve'eloch, on each side. My love, can we not assume de'ika tikra, it's talking about that it has a roof, and nonetheless the Braisa says it's not considered an extension to the town? And that was your question. You asked, if you have two walls with a roofing, is it considered an extension? Here you see in the Braisa that it's not. Says the Gemara, Loi, you cannot bring proof from this Braisa. De leka tikra. It could be the Braisa is talking about that not only are two of its walls breached, but there's no roof on it, and that's why it's not considered an extension. But in the event that it had two walls with a roof, maybe it would be an extension, so we could not resolve the question. And now the Gemara is going to discuss another halacha we just saw in the Braisa. Bayis shebeyom, if you have a house out at sea, it's considered a dwelling place and an extension to a close-by city. Asks the Gemara, lemai chozi, what's it used for? It's got to be a place where it's used to be for dwelling. It's got to have some type of a normal residential purpose. What residential purpose does a single home on some island have? Omer of Papa, bayis she'osu lefanus by kelim shebesfina. This is a building that the ship's kelim, the utensils, used to be removed from the ships and stored on this little home on this island. And therefore, it's a significant enough use that it's considered a residential type of home and can be considered an extension to the city. Continues the Gemara. Uma'ora ein misabrin imo. We saw in the Braisa that a cave is not considered enough of a dwelling place, a residential place, to be considered an extension to the city. Uma'oro ein misabrin imo. Is it so clear, is it true, what we saw in the Braisa, that a cave does not serve as an extension to the city? V'atani rabchia ma'oro misaberes imo. Did we not see that in a Braisa explicitly that a cave does serve as an extension? Answers the Gemara, Omer Abaya, k'sheyesh binyon al piyo. The type of cave that it's an extension is if there's a building over the mouth of the cave, and since there's a building, then we can consider the cave as an extension. Asks the Gemara, I don't understand. V'tepe klemishum binyan gufei. If the cave has the building, and only because of the building the cave is considered a residential part, then say that the building on the cave is already considered enough of an extension of the city. What do I need the cave for? Answers the Gemara, Loi tzricha lahashlim. In the event that the home itself is not 4x4 amis. So as far as the home itself is concerned, it would not be an extension to the city. Together with the cave, then the cave adds the extra area to the home. Now, together with the cave, and thanks to the cave, the home is considered as being a dwelling place of four armies by four armies, and then it can be used as an extension for the city. Others say that we can answer the Gemara's question is simply if the cave is protruding beyond the home. So once you have a home with the cave, and the cave is now considered a dwelling place because of the home with it, that we actually extend the city till the edge of the cave. Continues the Gemara. Omer of Huna. Yoishvei Tzrifin. These people who dwell in huts, they're in no man's land, they're all the time moving around. Ein moidedin lehen elo mi pesach botehem. Then even though there may be a whole load of people in huts, none of them are permanent. They move around a couple of weeks here. When the pasture is over, they move to somewhere else. Then even if there's a few of them together, they do not make up a city. We do not give a boundary around the whole lot. Just every single home. Ein moidedin lehem elo mi pesach. Based on every single person in every single hut, measures the tchum from the entrance of his own home, 2,000 amos. Asks the Gemara an interesting question, Mosib Rav Chisda. We saw in the Pasuk regarding Klal Yisrael when they were traveling in the desert. They were also Yoishvei Tzrifin, they were in huts. They didn't have established fixed homes, and they were also from time to time moving around. Vayachanu al hayardein mi beis hayishimois. Ad ovel hashitim ba'arveis moyov. Which means that the Klal Yisrael, they camped alongside the Jordan from Beis HaYishimois until Evel HaShittim. V'omer Rabbi Bar Bar Chono, Omer Rabbi Yechanon. Rabbi Bar Bar Chono said, L'didi chozili hahu asra. I saw that area, which was the area that encompassed the entire camps of the Jewish nation in the desert. V'hava tlosa parasa al tlosa parasa. It was 3 parasa by 3 parasa, which is 8,000 amois by 8,000 amois from one side of the camps to the other. V'tanya, we learnt in a braisa, k'shein nifnim, when somebody had to relieve themselves within the camps, ein nifnin loy lifnim v'loy litzadem. They would not relieve themselves in an area ahead of the camps, nor in the area on the side of the camps, because they never knew at what point the camp would have to travel in that direction. But behind the camps, they would be able to relieve themselves. That means if anybody in front of the camp had to relieve themselves, they had to walk right to the back of the camps, which was 8,000 amis away from the front of the camps, and relieve themselves there. And the question is, if you say that people living in tents, in huts, we do not say that since we have a whole community of people like this, it constitutes a town, and they're all considered as a single, so to speak, four amis, and the tchum is from the edge of these people's huts. No, we just now said that every hut has to measure its own tchum. If so, every person in the desert would have just 2,000 amis to walk around his tent on Shabbos. So how can the people at the front of the camps go all the way to the back of the camps, 8,000 amis away? Answers the Gemara, Omale, Rava answered to Rav Chisda, Digle Midbar Ka'omras, are you trying to bring proof or a question from the flags in the deserts, from the encampments in the desert? Kiven d'chsivbu, since it says in the Pasuk, Al pi Hashem yachanu, by the word of Hashem they would camp. Val pi Hashem yisoh, and by the word of Hashem they would travel. Command the kvir luhu domi. Since they didn't move without a specific instruction from Hashem, then every single encampment was considered permanent. It was not considered a temporary type of dwelling. And since it was permanent, then we can include all these dwellings as one. This whole community constitutes a town, and therefore the entire camps of Klal Yisrael is considered a single four amis, and there was no issue of going from one side of the camp to the other on Shabbos. Omer of Chinana, Bar of Kahan, Omer of Ashi, Im Yeshom Sholosh Chatzeiros Shel Shnei Botim Hukvu. Then this seems to back what Rav Huna says. The Rav Huna said if you only have dwellers of huts, that they do not form a community, they do not constitute a town, unless you have 3 courtyards, and in each courtyard you have 2 homes, which only then you have the nucleus of a city, And then all the other huts can be called huts to be extensions of that city and will all be included in the town. But if you do not have three courtyards with two solid permanent homes in each, then we do not incorporate all these huts to constitute a city. So you see from here that just huts without homes and courtyards is not a city, like Rav Huna said before. And now the Gemara is going to discuss a little bit some other ramifications of these temporary dwellings of people that just nomads and they do not have permanent place to live. Omer of Yud Omer Rav, Yoishvei Tzrufin, these hut dwellers, V'holchim Midboris, and the desert travelers, Chayim Eyonom Chayim, their lives are not lives. And Rashi says that in order to be called alive, you need to have a certain amount of stability, a certain amount of pleasure from where you live. You can't just be exposed to the elements like that and still be considered as if you're alive. Unashem uvneim einom shelohem. And their wives and their children, it's questionable if they are theirs. Which means that living in this type of lifestyle, we'll soon see why, this type of lifestyle invites all sorts of inappropriate relationships, to the point that it was difficult to trust that the wives had not had any relations with anyone else and whether their children were indeed theirs. Tanya Namiyachi, we saw Brisa supporting this. Eliezer ish Biraya Oimir. Eliezer of Biraya said as follows: Yoishvei Tzrufin ke Yoishvei Kvorim. The people who dwell in huts are like grave dwellers. It's as if they're living in a grave. It's not a life. V'al b'nei Sem, and about their daughters, who Oimer, he said the following pasuk: Or roshoichevim kol behema, cursed is he who lies with any animal, which means that their daughters were at risk of inappropriate relationships. And the Gemara is going to explain my tama, what is the reason that we assume that their daughters were not theirs. Ula Omar, She'ein Nemer Chatzois. Ula said that the men who typically would want to travel to a bathhouse, and since they're not living in an established town, they would have to travel far away in order to use the bathhouse. And therefore they would leave all the women in the community on their own, and some immoral men would then intrude and come to the community and have inappropriate relations with the women that were left there. And therefore, it was questionable, as we discussed. Rabbi Yechanan said, "Nepnei shemargishin ze leze betvila." Since they didn't have a mikveh in the city, because they were not living in cities; they were living in the fields and the deserts. So the women would have to go together as groups to the city in order to go to the mikveh, and they would be traveling on their own. And then there would again be some immoral men that would follow them. And there would be yichud, they would be in secluded areas with these women. And we know the halacha is, the Gemara says, the end of Kiddushin, a man is not allowed to be in a secluded area even with two women. And since they were exposed to these type of immoral people, therefore there was doubt about, and there was questionability about how pure their wives and daughters stayed. May binayu. What's the difference between whether the reason is because the men went to the bathhouses, leaving the women in the community, or whether the women had to travel on their own to go out of the community to the mikveh? The difference would be if you have a river near to the homes, near to this community, so the women would not have to go out together, they could go to the river and use it as a mikveh. However, the men would still travel away to go to the bathhouses, leaving their wives at risk. Continues the Gemara. Omer Rav Huna. Rav Huna is now going to discuss another type of dwelling with advantages or disadvantages. Kol ir she'ein bo yerek. Any city that does not have vegetables, that is not easily available to buy vegetables in it, ein tamut chochem roshoi lodibor, a Talmud Chacham should not reside there, because vegetables are cheap, and a Talmud Chacham, if he can buy cheap vegetables, he needs less funds to feed himself and his family, and he can spend more time sitting and learning Torah. However, if only more expensive, lavish foods are available, he would have to work, spend more hours away from learning, working to make money, and that will hinder his advancing in his Torah studies. Asks the Gemara, Lememra de Yerek Ma'aliasa? This seems to say, from you, or Avuna said, it seems to be that vegetables are beneficial. And you're saying a Talmud Chacham should only live in a city where vegetables are easy to come by. Vatanya, we learnt in a Braisa. Shloisha marbines azevel. There are three types of items, of food items, that increase a person's excrement, which would seem to be that it's not advantageous, it's harmful. V'koyfefines akoymo, it causes his posture to be bent over. V'noitlin achas michomish meois mimoir einof shel odom. It takes away, it causes a person to lose a 1/500th of his eyesight. V'eluhain, and these three things are as follows. They are pas kibor, coarse bread, flour that the white, pure part of the flour has already been removed, v'sheichor chodosh, and fresh beer, v'yorok, and vegetables. So you see that vegetables are harmful. It's not something which is advantageous. Answers the Gemara loikasha, it's not difficult. Ha besume v'karti, when it's talking about garlic and leek, they are very healthy. Ha b'shay yorokas, but yarki, other vegetables, indeed, are not so healthy. Kedetanya, we saw in a braisa, shum yerek, garlic is considered a vegetable, it's very healthy. Krishin, chetzi yerek, leeks are like half a vegetable, they're only half as healthy. Niretz noin, but if you see radishes, nireh samchaim, niretz noin, if you see tznoin, radish, nireh samchaim, you've seen a medicine of life, which means that it's something which is very, very healthy. Either way, we see that garlic and leek are singled out, and radishes are singled out as being healthy vegetables. Others are not as healthy. Ask the Gemara, V'otanya, niretz noin nire samoves. You just said now that seeing radishes is like seeing the medicine of life. Here it says in another braisa that when you see radishes, you're seeing the medicine of death. It's a poison. Answers the Gemara, loy kasha, kan be'alin, can be imois. The leaves of the radishes are very unhealthy. However, the imois, the bulbs of the radishes, the roots of the radishes, the parts that's generally eaten, those are very healthy. Can be imois achamo, the radish roots that are very healthy, is very healthy mainly or especially in the summer months. Can be imois agashomim. However, when in the winter, when it's rainy, at that period, eating radishes is not healthy. Continues the Gemara, Omer of Yudah Omer Rav, another statement regarding what type of city is healthy and appropriate to live in. Kol iru sheyesh bo mailois umarodois, any city that's got lots of hills, it's got ascents and descents, you have to walk up, walk down, and it's quite difficult to travel through. Odom ubehemo shebo, the people and the animals inside it, meisim bechatzi yameim, they die in the middle of their lives, middle age. Asks the Gemara, Meisim Selkadaitoch, does that really happen? You really think that people die and animals die half their lives? Elohim mazkinim bechatzi yameim. What it means is it causes them to age much younger than they would otherwise. The strain of walking up and down steep slopes causes them to age prematurely. Omer Vuna Breder of Yeshua, Hano Mulyoso, De Bay Biri or De Bay Norosh, these steep roads that joined the cities of Biri and the cities of Norosh, these two Azkun caused me to age prematurely because they were very steep slopes up and down, and therefore he said these slopes caused him to age, as we saw that living in a city with hills causes a person to age prematurely. In the next shir, we're going to continue from here.